This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The CDC's new guidance allows vaccinated Americans to go largely without masks, and the lifted mandates have left people with a lot of questions. For some, that unease is adding to growing re-entry anxiety. After over a year in lockdown, states across the U.S. are preparing for a reopening. As social agendas fill up and workplaces adjust, fears about what that actually looks like and feels like are surfacing. Dr. Celine Gounder joins us to help us through the guidance. She's an infectious disease specialist and epidemiologist at New York University School of Medicine and Bellevue Hospital Center. She's also the host of the podcast Epidemic and served as a member of Biden's Coronavirus Transition Task Force. Dr. Gounder, thanks so much for being here today.
It's great to be here.
Also with us, Alexandra Solomon, who's joining us to help us through our feelings. She's a licensed clinical psychologist at Northwestern University and author of Loving Bravely. Professor Solomon, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So Dr. Gounder, let's start with the new mask guidance from the CDC. What do we know about these recommendations right now?
Well, I think it's important to be really clear about this. If you are vaccinated, you are protected. If you are not vaccinated, you are not safe. And you should please go out and get vaccinated, and until then, wear a mask. We know these folks are still at risk because the level of transmission of coronavirus in the community is still quite high in much of the country. And so if you're not vaccinated, you are still very much at risk.
What are some of the situations where you would advise people to keep their masks on?
Well, the CDC has said that there are certain situations, even if you are fully vaccinated, that you still should be wearing a mask. This includes healthcare facilities, long-term care facilities like nursing homes, and congregate settings. So that could be anything from jail or prison to a homeless shelter. And also if you're traveling, if you're in a transportation hub, which could be an airport or a subway station, or you're on a plane, these are all situations where you absolutely should still be wearing a mask, even if you are vaccinated.
So with the understanding that we're not verifying that someone is vaccinated, how did the CDC come to this decision? Do you know?
Well, I think this is where I'm not entirely sure I agree, at least with the way this was communicated. I think they got the medical, the epidemiologic science right. Again, we know that vaccinated people are protected. People who are not vaccinated are not protected, and they are at risk. But I think the CDC got the communications piece and the behavioral science part of this wrong. And I think the fact is this involves a lot more than just the CDC in terms of stakeholders. I think there should have been a bit more done to work with employers, for example, about what this was going to mean for them, their workplaces, and all of the other folks who are being affected by this. I think there just should have been more coordination about how this was messaged and explained to the public.
Well, Kelly tweets, please mention how immunocompromised people are still at risk, even if they are vaxxed. I hate the argument that unvaxxed people can lie and unmask at their own risk. It's not just their risk. It's cancer patients, transplant patients, and anyone with a compromised immune system. And Dr. Gounder, it's important to note here that for some people, they either may not be able to be vaccinated because of other health issues, or they may have compromised immune systems. So help us understand why it's important for us to still exercise some caution here.
Right. So some of the folks who have not been vaccinated yet obviously includes kids. We have only just opened this up to 12 and up recently. And for kids under 12, they simply do not have access yet. Other communities, Latinx, for example, communities, we have seen from polling by the Kaiser Family Foundation, for example, that there is actually quite a lot of interest in getting vaccinated as soon as possible, but they have been encountering barriers that could be having services in their own language, in Spanish. Another barrier that we've seen is being able to take time off work, not just to get vaccinated, but what if they have side effects? And so that could mean, you know, 2-3 days off at the time of each shot that they need to take off and are not earning wages. And so those are really important barriers. And it's not that these folks don't want to get vaccinated. They do. They just haven't been able to. And then, yes, there are other groups, for example, immunosuppressed groups, as I mentioned, organ transplant patients. We have seen data that they do not always respond to vaccination because they are on drugs that suppress their immune system so that they don't reject that organ transplant. But it also means that even if they've been vaccinated, you can't rely on that to say that they are are for sure immune. And so we do need to be keeping in mind that just because we've been vaccinated and have that fortune and privilege to have had access to that, not everybody has had that yet.
Now, Professor Solomon, a lot of people don't feel comfortable shedding their masks just yet, even if they are vaccinated. Putting the science aside, how much of our reactions are just about feeling safe?
Absolutely. You know, as I listen to you and Dr. Gounder talking, I mean, I feel the own rise, you know, the rise of my anxiety as well, right? These are complicated times, and we are facing now this chapter of emergence with systems that are pretty well fried from what we've been going through for the last 15 months, right? So now we have a new network of decisions and options and possibilities and conversations and conflicts, you know, with friends and family members and tension with workplaces. And this is all happening to us when our buckets are, you know, overflowing from the stress of having lived through the last 15 months. So I think you're exactly right to say that, you know, this idea of safety, you know, there's the science certainly, and then there's also what our bodies are ready for. And our bodies have been, you know, through certainly a lowercase t trauma, and for many of us, a capital letter T trauma. But this lowercase t trauma of living day by day concerned about our own health and safety and the health and safety of our loved ones and our financial stability and our mental health and all of the racial reckoning that has been happening this last year. And so certainly we may know in our minds that we are vaccinated and therefore protected. Our bodies have been vigilant and caring for us. And so our bodies may just need that level of caution, right, and safety that comes from wearing a mask for just a bit longer. And that's okay. That needs to be okay.
In a moment, we'll get into why some people have anxiety about the pandemic ending. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Amazon Prime Video with the Underground Railroad. From Academy Award winner Barry Jenkins and based on the Pulitzer Prize winning novel by Colson Whitehead, the new Amazon original The Underground Railroad chronicles Cora Randall, played by newcomer Tuso Mbedu, when she discovers an actual network of trains and tunnels beneath the southern soil. Cora must evade a violent bounty hunter before she can find freedom. The Underground Railroad premieres May 14th on Amazon Prime Video.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hint, fruit-infused water with no calories or sweeteners. Hint water comes in over 25 flavors. The watermelon water actually tastes like watermelon. The blackberry water tastes like blackberries. Hint is water with a touch of true fruit flavor. You can get Hint water at stores, or you can have it delivered directly to your door. When you buy two cases, you'll get a third case free and free shipping. Visit drinkhint.com and use promo code NPR at checkout.
I'm Yoe Shaw.
I'm Kia Miakonatis.
We're the hosts of the NPR podcast, Invisibilia.
You can think of Invisibilia kind of like a sonic blacklight.
When you switch us on, you'll hear surprising and intimate stories.
Stories that help you notice things in your world that maybe you didn't see before.
Listen to the Invisibilia podcast from NPR.
We're talking about new mask guidance from the CDC and why some are feeling anxious about a return to normal. Professor Solomon, you know, this new guidance relies mostly on the honor system, but there are a lot of divisions within our country right now. We heard from people who said they would still wear a mask simply because they don't trust their neighbor. What are your thoughts on the lack of trust we have in each other right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's both sad and unsurprising, right? We know that we're living through a time of unprecedented political tensions and rivalries and polarization. And so it makes sense that that we're feeling this way because masks have unfortunately been both a public health, you know, need and a political statement. So it is unfortunate. It adds another layer of complexity, but it makes sense given the current situation.
Well, let's go back to our voicemail box. This is Jacob from Kentucky with a question for you, Dr. Gounder.
I have a question about some previous CDC guidance. The CDC used to say that even vaccinated people should wear masks because they weren't yet sure about whether vaccinated people could still spread the virus. And I wonder if there have been any updates on that or any further study to make any more substantial conclusions one way or the other.
Dr. Gounder, what can you tell us?
Yeah, this is really the data that's come in over the last couple weeks here that has prompted this shift with respect to recommending masks for vaccinated persons. And again, remember, if you're in a healthcare facility, a long-term care facility, congregate setting, or travel facility or traveling on public transportation of some kind, you are still required to wear a mask or asked to wear a mask even if you're vaccinated. But what we have learned is that if you are vaccinated, yes, there is still a very low level risk that you could be infected. Those infections are typically asymptomatic, which means you don't have any symptoms, and you're highly unlikely to pass that infection on to other people.
Well, here's another voicemail we got from Erica in Minneapolis about their anxiety right now.
I find it really overwhelming to suddenly be scheduling all these activities and things that I used to do a lot and that I've been longing to do for the last year. And I'm just kind of shocked at how anxiety-inducing it can be to, like, fill up my social calendar again and have play dates for my child and even fun things that I've just been desperate to do, like dining on a patio, feel almost kind of draining. And I'm really grateful to be fully vaccinated, but I'm learning that I need to maybe take things a little bit more slowly.
And Aaron posted on Facebook, I think there's going to be a lot of psychic damage from this. It's hard to go from every random person I encounter might give me a deadly disease to I'm now protected from that deadly disease. You know, Professor Solomon, some people are balking at the idea of change after a year of staying at home. How does that shape the way you're thinking about reentry anxiety?
You know, that voicemail just lands so deeply for me. I posted on my Instagram over the weekend, you know, some questions to my audience about their experiences. And this is what I heard again and again and again is this idea of, you know, this is what I've been wanting for so long. And now that I have it, I'm terrified or I'm exhausted or I'm anxious. And it's a reminder to us that one of the most important things we can do for our emotional wellness is learn how to hold these moments that I call both ands, where we can have two feelings that are seemingly contradictory, seemingly paradoxical, and they can both be true for us at the same time. We can be both excited to reconnect with loved ones and friends and anxious about it. We can feel both, you know, safe with our vaccines and scared, that those two things can be true at the same time. And so what I worry most about is people trying to expect themselves to be solidly, you know, feeling okay and excited and energetic and enthusiastic at a time when that just does not make sense. That's not the truth of our lived experience. Our lived experience is far more nuanced than that.
You know, Professor Solomon, when I think about the past year, the pandemic ate up so much of our mental and emotional energy, but people were also dealing with other crises and lost loved ones to, you know, things other than coronavirus. And for folks who are trying to figure out the new normal because their life has changed significantly, not because of the pandemic, but because of something else, any advice for them?
I think that this makes so much sense. You're right that there were all kinds of losses along the way, breakups and divorces and deaths and losses for sure. And I think that part of what's been so difficult about the losses in the past year is we haven't been able to grieve them the way that we usually would. And so I would invite people to, you know, create whatever kinds of rituals with the people they love and trust that maybe they weren't able to have in the past year. You can have them now. You know, grief doesn't have a time stamp on it, which is in some ways one of the painful aspects of grief, as there is no time stamp or, you know, deadline on it. But it also means that we get to revisit. And so if there was a ritual you weren't able to do in the past year, I wonder about making the space to have that ritual now with the people that you love and trust and really can begin to connect with and look into their eyes and, you know, be physically near them, which is all of what we need as humans to make sense of the losses that we go through. So it's not too late.
Well, and I think it's important to acknowledge that we are still in a pandemic. So when we talk about post-pandemic life, it's important to contextualize that, Dr. Gounder, and acknowledge that the pandemic isn't actually over yet.
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand, you know, pandemic means you have the spread of this virus around the world. And while we in the United States might be ahead of the rest of the world in vaccinating and some sort of return to normalcy, we're not going to be post-pandemic worldwide for at least a couple more years. And so, you know, there are some things we can do more normally here back home as more and more people get vaccinated, but this will still affect our lives if we're traveling overseas. It will affect with respect to global markets, the economy, and certainly our national security. If you have massive destabilization, as we're seeing now in India with that kind of level of spread and death, this is going to have impacts on us, maybe not directly, but certainly indirectly.
Well, here's another voicemail we got from Carrie in Austin, Texas.
I am just confused because I think the head of the CDC mentioned just a couple weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, that she was very worried. We hadn't reached herd immunity. People weren't getting vaccines. And she was just in a kind of a panic mode about the future for COVID. And now all of a sudden it's okay to take a mask off. So I'm just confused. And I wondered why the sharp turnaround in not very much time.
Dr. Gounder, Carrie's referring to CDC Director Rochelle Walensky's fears of impending doom in March. And we're hearing a lot of confusion. Is there a danger in updating the guidance so often?
Well, we're trying, you know, the public health community is trying to update the guidance as we learn. And so if you are too slow, which is frankly what many Republican congressmen and senators were accusing Dr. Walensky of being too slow, you know, you have some people who feel like, well, we're being unnecessarily restrictive. And then if you really do try to catch up with the science as it is unfolding, for some people that feels too fast. What Dr. Walensky was referring to with respect to that, quote, impending doom was the B.1.1.7 UK variant. Many of us were very concerned because when that variant emerged in the UK, that led to a big surge in cases. They had to go on another strict lockdown over the winter holidays. That variant then spread to Europe. Many hospitals there were, again, overrun. You had ICUs in Paris, for example, that were filled to the gills with people, again, sick with COVID. And that we were lucky in that that variant did not hit us until a bit later, by which point we were farther along than the Brits or the Europeans in our vaccine rollout. And so we did see a surge. We saw a surge in Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, that upper Midwest Great Lakes area, but then it came back down. And that's really a reflection of the fact that we were farther along in vaccination in much of the country, and so we're more insulated from the threat that variant posed.
Here's another tweet we got. What's the deal with vaccinated people testing positive for COVID? Thinking about the Yankees this past week. Dr. Gounder?
So these vaccines are excellent. They are 90% effective, the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, 90% effective in preventing all infections. Johnson & Johnson's pretty good, probably more like around 70% in preventing all infections. But this is as good as it gets. And the infections, the breakthrough infections you see in people who have been vaccinated, remember, it's not 100% protective. Those breakthrough infections tend to be asymptomatic, which means people do not have symptoms. They're not getting severe disease. They're not ending up in the hospital. They're not ending up dying. And so the vaccines are really accomplishing what they're meant to do, which is to prevent us from getting really sick.
We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
COVID-19 restrictions are easing, and we're talking about reentry anxiety. Now, joining us to talk about post-pandemic life for employees is Melissa Swift. She works for Korn Ferry, an organizational consulting firm where she helps businesses around the world transform their workplaces. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
We're also here with Dr. Celine Gounder, an infectious disease specialist and epidemiologist at New York University School of Medicine and Bellevue Hospital Center, and Alexandra Solomon, a licensed clinical psychologist at Northwestern University and author of Loving Bravely. Melissa, what kind of anxiety are you hearing from employees right now who are expecting a return to their office?
Well, some of it is that this is just a dramatic step. Right. Like, let's put aside any anxieties about kind of the health and safety pieces, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we've all gotten used to a way of working over the past year, and now we're being asked to change again. So kind of the magnitude of that change, even though it's framed in positive terms, is just as great as the magnitude of that change a year ago. And I think sometimes we're kind of not giving enough credit to that fact.
Well, Nina posted on Facebook, due to having more flexibility and not having to commute, my life is much improved thanks to the pandemic. I am less stressed, healthier, I exercised more. It's the first time I feel like I've truly had work-life balance. I'm not ready to let these things go, but talks are starting about returning to work. What should managers and those in leadership do to prepare for a return, Melissa, to help ease this for people?
Well, what we're seeing from, I think, organizations that really have their arms kind of well wrapped around this is that they are not trying to kind of flip the switch and say everything goes back to the way it was before. Because to exactly that point, there were some really positive gains made in certain ways. And it's a mixed bag, right? Some people experience better work-life balance, some people experience worse. But on the whole, there are some really good lessons about how work can get done differently to create greater flexibility and also greater inclusion, right? So if you're, you know, a working parent, any number of scenarios, you know, there may be ways that you figured out how to work over the past year that are preferable and make you feel more included. And the organizations that are really kind of forward thinking are taking that into account and working through all the different use cases and thinking about, okay, for this person's life, you know, how did it change for the better? And how can we continue to replicate that?
Let's turn to another voicemail. Here's Eric from Orlando.
Anytime there's these like ordinances or, you know, are put into place or now, you know, getting removed, I feel that it's always been the duty of like the local business. And I'm someone in the restaurant industry. I'm a manager and, you know, I find it that it's my staff and I who are enforcing these, and it's constant pushback from customers.
Now, a lot of people have been working in person throughout the pandemic and have to deal with shifting guidance and how it affects their interactions with customers. Melissa, how would you advise management to support employees who may not feel safe or comfortable with this change?
I think it's a great question. And I would connect this back to the jobs numbers, you know, about a week ago, right? That, you know, people are saying, okay, well, folks don't want to come back into the workforce. Well, it may be that they don't want to come back into jobs as currently configured and as currently compensated. So it's worth really thinking through, okay, well, what is that employee's journey throughout the day? How are they getting exposed to people? Are there ways to restructure their work? And then also, does the risk-reward equation in terms of how they're paid still make sense? So you look at those two levers, right? And that's going to give you a framework for kind of thinking through, you know, what changes need to be made so people can, you know, feel safe, comfortable, and valued. And that's what gets folks back to work.
We got this tweet from Susan who says, I think that employers who dropped mask mandates do not have their employees and the health of some of their customers as a concern. Until there is more vaccinations, many people will not go into their establishments, especially those who can't have a shot. Melissa, how would you encourage companies to think about changing the mask rules for their establishment, especially when, as Susan points out there are people who can't have a shot. And as Dr. Gounder pointed out, there are people who haven't had access to one.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, there's a moment happening right now when I think organizations are being forced to confront the fact that, you know, employees need to have more of a voice in their futures than they've had historically. And this is kind of one element of that. That, you know, it's nice to make a corporate decision about customers, but the customer experience and the employee experience intersect in certain ways where it may be, you know, the customer's, you know, feeling of well-being, but it's the employee's life. And that life, you know, needs to take precedence.
And Melissa, we can say to people, it's important to speak up, but talk to the management here and tell them, why is it important for them to listen to what they're hearing from their employees?
Well, I think some of it is that, you know, of course, there's the lens that your employees have value, right? That they mean something. But even if you don't take that lens, think about all the ways that you are communicating with your customers. And if your employees are fundamentally having mental health challenges, if they're uncomfortable, if they're anxious, you're kidding yourselves if you don't think that gets communicated out to your customers in a million subtle ways. So, you know, even if you don't take kind of the more humanistic view that I personally believe organizations should take, there's a very, you know, kind of business point of view about, you know, why you need to care for that employee population, because a lot of it does get communicated on and it will have an impact on your actual business.
Now, Melissa, we heard a lot about factory work during the pandemic, mostly about the less than optimal protection policies. What are you hearing from factory workers?
So that's an interesting one, because we're actually now getting some questions about equity going forward that, you know, we saw, to the points made earlier, you know, a lot more flexibility in, let's say, office work, right, during the pandemic. I can work at different times, et cetera, different places. And so now we're seeing actually from factory populations, well, hey, how do we get some of that flexibility? And that's not an impossible thing. I mean, the 8-hour factory shift, right? That's from kind of old fashioned, Tayloristic, Industrial Revolution era, you know, thinking. So there are some interesting things that can be done with factory work in terms of time and teams and how people work together and how you chunk up schedules. That could actually give factory workers some of that flexibility that other populations experienced over the last year.
I want to wrap on this email from Steve, who makes a good point. He says, it's becoming infuriating as a business owner to listen to your stories about business obligations with regards to their employees. What about government having our backs? It puts all the pressure on businesses to do the right thing. And Melissa, what are you hearing from businesses about, you know, the position new guidance puts them in as they're trying to make decisions about how to move forward?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we always think about kind of the future of work being the triangulation of three groups, right? It's employers, employees, and society. And that society piece is partly represented by government, but partly all represented by kind of our collective decision-making, right? That's been the part that it's been really hard for employers to kind of get their arms around. So what we're seeing as leading practice is setting flexible policies that at least kind of key off of different government decisions. So at least, you know, there's a range of ways to respond. I think what we're seeing is kind of, we're going to be fast followers to government's decisions, and we're going to try and be as agile as possible while triangulating that critically important third leg of the triangle, you know, which would be employees.
Dr. Gounder, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are provisions in the Biden plans, the America Rescue Plan, the jobs plan, to really support small businesses, in particular bars and restaurants that have been hit so hard during the pandemic, and really to help them remain viable while doing the right thing by their employees.
That's Dr. Celine Gounder, an infectious disease specialist and epidemiologist at Bellevue Hospital Center. Also with us, Melissa Swift, the global leader for workforce transformation at the consulting firm Korn Ferry, and Alexandra Solomon, a licensed clinical psychologist at Northwestern University. Thanks to you all. Today's producer was Michelle Harvin. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.